Well, y'all shouldn't have to worry about falling asleep. No, it's very good to be here this morning and just been blessed with the service so far. And I do want to talk a little about mothers a little bit this morning, obviously. But I'm just going to speak for, I don't know, I say 10 minutes, but I always end up going longer. But I'm going to speak for a few minutes here. And then I want to give y'all opportunity to share about your mother or just anything about motherhood this morning. Just give you an opportunity. I thought about sending a hotline so you could prepare, but I didn't know exactly what Jamie, the youth girls, had in mind, so I didn't want to undermine them in case they had that in mind. So, but yeah, just to be thinking about that, about, you know, sharing about anything that, you know, something that your mother taught you, something that stuck with you all these years, anything about your mother. How many of y'all saw the Northern Lights? Oh man, was that awesome or what? I don't know. That could be a sermon on itself, I guess, right there. We could talk about that, but just the glory. And I was talking with Joel a little bit, you know, he said about, you know, sin or the devil is about darkness. It's the absence of light, right? And God is light, right? Like, that's how he shows his glory, is because he is the light, right? Shekinah light, you know? And so, like, with them Northern Lights, you know, like, he could have protected the earth any other way from the sun's rays or the whatever they, what is it, gamma rays? I don't know what you call them particles that are shooting at us. But he created an ionosphere, right? And that's what protects the earth, right? It keeps them out of there. Why did he make it colorful? Because I think that's just who God is. Like, he's like blue and green. I mean, I don't know. And to see it this far north or south was pretty neat. And just, did y'all see it waving and stuff? Man, that was awesome. Anyway, I was excited about that. But let's get back to mothers. But you know what? As awesome as that is, I think he created something else that's even greater than that, and that was mothers, right? He created mothers. And I'm going to do a decent amount. I have an article that I want to read. It's actually written by John MacArthur. Motherhood, so it talks about the importance of motherhood, and I tend to think, when I think about mothers, well, no, not think about mothers, let me back up. So in today's world, I think motherhood is so messed up as far as what the world, society deems mothers and all that, right? And so where does the modern day feminism movement come into play? Like, I think it's totally messed up society. And so that's kind of where I don't know how to all put this into my own words, because I'm not an orator or whatever you want to call that. But this article, I thought, was kind of what was on my mind, kind of what I wanted to express a little bit. And, you know, with men, we're usually, when Father's Day, we're usually being challenged, you know. Mother's Day, we're pretty soft. We're like, hey, y'all, you know. So today is going to be it is a little bit of a challenge in there, but it's also going to be an encouragement as well. An encouragement for what you are doing as a mother, the importance of motherhood, that there's really, like, why do you even want to begin to do a man's job? You know what I mean? Your job is so important that that's kind of where my thoughts, let's don't let the modern feminist movement come into the church. And a lot of times we're behind the times, some of the church. And I think, yeah, anyway. So I'm going to read this article. I might make a few thoughts. And so, like I said, I always talk too much and then I end up running out of time. But all right, so I know reading can sometimes, like, you start wondering, but try to stay engaged with what it's saying. I'll try to make it as interesting as I can here. So, but the title says the profile of a godly mother, and this is actually he's using Hannah out of 1 Samuel 1 verses 1 through 20, kind of as an example. And this is the beginning of it. It says, I once came across an interesting article on motherhood by a man named W.L. Codwell, written back in 1928, and here's what it said. Well, may we pause to pay honor to her who, after Jesus Christ, is God's best gift to men, mother. Isn't that pretty awesome? That's I like that saying. It says, pay honor to her who, after Jesus Christ, is God's best gift to men. And that's talking about our mothers. It was she who shared her life with us when as yet our members were unformed. Into the valley of the shadow of death she walked, that we might have the light of life. In her arms was the garner of our food and the soft couch for our repose. There we nestled in the hour of pain. There was the playground of our infant glee. Those same arms later became our refuge and stronghold. It was she who taught our baby feet to go and lifted us up over the rough places. Excuse me. Her blessed hands plied the needle by day and by night, to make our clothes. This is 1928, so. But she put the book under our arm and started us off for school. But best of all, she taught our baby lips to lisp the name of Jesus and told us first the wondrous story of a Savior's love. Caldwell went on to say, the pride of America is its mothers. There are wicked mothers like Jezebel of old. There are unnatural mothers who sell their children into sin. There are sin-cursed, rum-soaked, and abandoned mothers to whom their motherhood is the exposure of their shame. I'm glad to believe, however, that there are comparatively few in this class. And this is Caldwell in this book continuing. This is 1928. So now John MacArthur's writing here. He says, is that true? Are there merely a few unfaithful mothers? Maybe that was the case in 1928, but it's sadly not so today. And I'm not sure when this was written, but it would have definitely been later than that. High rates of illegitimacy and divorce reveal the contemporary abandonment of marriage. Motherhood's High rates of illegitimacy and divorce reveal the contemporary abandonment of marriage, motherhood's foundation. Annual abortions number in the millions, which shows the heart of many mothers has grown cold. Millions of children whose mothers allow them to see the light of day cower in fear under angry abuse, and countless are the mothers who ignore, neglect, or abandon their children in pursuit of self-centered fulfillment. Motherhood is an inconvenient interruption to their lifestyle. For better or worse, mothers are the maker of men. They are the architects of the next generation. That's why the goal of becoming a godly mother is the highest and most noble pursuit of womanhood. And I believe that's true. God has specially equipped women for that very purpose. And in Christ, women can experience profound satisfaction in that divinely ordained pursuit. They can be who God created them to be. Ladies, please pay attention. There are so many who would capture your interests today to tear you away from God's high calling on your life, to focus on your career, buy more stuff, pamper yourself. You've heard it all, I'm sure. Don't buy what they're selling. It's all a lie. I would like to read another insert that kind of goes along with this a little bit. Actually, let me see. Yeah, I'll read that at this time. And just kind of goes along with what he just said there in the last couple paragraphs. So again, this is in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, it says, we have God's standard reiterated in the New Testament, a standard which is given by many times in the Old when it says that a woman shall be saved in childbearing. And I've always wondered what that meant when it says saved by childbearing in Timothy there. I think I'm going to read it here, but anyway, yeah, I'll keep reading. Interesting phrase, right? A woman shall be saved in childbearing. Now, the passage in 1 Timothy 2 is saying this. In the church, the leaders of the church are to be men. And Paul says, I do not permit a woman to take authority and to teach, but to learn in silence, to be in subjection. For the woman was made for the man, and the woman was the first in sin. And so the woman is given a role of submission to a man, but she shall be saved in her childbearing. I'll keep reading. What he's saying there is that salvation, not for the soul of a woman, not spiritual eternal salvation, but the saving of her dignity and the salvation of her personhood and the significance of her meaning and the ultimate happiness of her existence is in creation is found not from leading the church, not from preaching in the assembly, but from bearing children, that God's intention for most women, and there are, What he's saying there is this, that salvation, not for the soul of a woman, not spiritual eternal salvation, but the saving of her dignity and the salvation of her personhood and the significance of her meaning and the ultimate happiness of her existence in creation is found not from leading the church, not from preaching in the assembly, but from bearing children, that's God's intention for most women, and there are exceptions, is what it's trying to say there. There are exceptions. 1 Corinthians 7 tells us that God has designed some women to be single, not to be married, and not to be mothers. And God has shut the womb of other women for his own purposes. But in the main, and for the majority, a woman's real happiness does not come from leading. A woman's real happiness does not come from dominating or ruling men. A woman's real happiness comes from raising children. That's how she contributes to the godliness of society, not by pastoring the church, but by raising the God-fearing seed. A man influences society from the top down. A woman influences society from the bottom up. And the two come together to create that godly society that God has so purposely designed. And so a woman must reach her goal by way of childbearing through childbearing. This is her act of obedience to God. And this is the way she is delivered from a role of secondary usefulness. This is a divine priority for her, is to raise people who will be godly influences in society. And so the Christian mother gets her greatest delight in children born to be raised to the glory of God. That is God's design. That is to be her life commitment. It is never to be sidetracked by her own self-indulgence, by her own desire for money, by her own desire to lead or rule men, by her own laziness or any other thing that would. So anyway, I thought that was a pretty good little excerpt there. You know, like the, if you think about the curse, like so that, like one of the, and hear me out a little bit, I think one of the things that would, that in the curse, in the fall, is, you know, when it said, like, when it said secondary usefulness, I was like, ooh, that sounds kind of bad, right? But I believe, let me see if I can get this right. I didn't write any notes on this. If you understand what I'm saying is that, like, because Eve sinned first, and there was that curse that was put on her. And part of that curse is wanting to rule her husband, right? Is wanting to rise up and be dominant, right? And because what is a woman's significance in the world of men and right? And so what he's saying here is that childbearing and being a mother is what God, like, that's the purpose. That's what create, like, what did it say there? He can say it better in here than what I can say it. Let's see if I can read. A woman's real happiness comes from raising children. That's how she contributes to the godliness of society. Not by pastoring the church, you know, being a leader, dominating, but by raising the God-fearing seed. Yeah. I don't know if that makes, hopefully that makes sense there. And I'll keep reading here in this other article. You know, a lot of, in the feminist movement or whatever, doesn't like to, we're not putting women down at all. Like, that's not what he's doing here. If anything, like our job, the men's job is to lead. Your job is, if it's raising children, you're raising the next generation. You're raising children. If it wasn't for women, we wouldn't have the next generation. You know what I'm saying? Like, so the importance of it, feminism, modern feminism has made where a woman has to have a career and raise the children, you know, where I think in the way God has designed it is that it's like you said, men go top down, women do the bottom up, and they meet in the middle. I look at a mother's job is almost more important than a father's job. I don't know. It's just, yeah. And so I want to keep reading in this article. So he's kind of coming to Hannah here. There I am talking more. All right. With that in mind, I want to encourage you this Mother's Day to consider one biblical example of motherhood. It's Hannah, the mother of the prophet Samuel, an emblem of the grace of womanhood. You can read all about her in 1 Samuel 1 and 2. Hannah became a mother by faith. In the opening verses of 1 Samuel, she is introduced as a childless woman. But God granted her a precious gift, and she became the mother of one of the greatest men who ever walked the earth. As you follow this account, you'll see the profile of a godly mother. And this next little excerpt is entitled, Devoted to Her Husband. Contrary to popular opinion, the most important characteristic of a godly mother is a relationship not with her children, but with her husband. What you communicate to your children through your marital relationship will stay with them for the rest of their lives. By watching you and your husband, they are learning the most fundamental lessons of life: love, self-sacrifice, integrity, virtue, sin, sympathy, compassion, understanding, and forgiveness. Whatever you teach them about these things, right or wrong, is planted deep within their hearts. That emphasis on marriage was very evident between Elkanah and Hannah. They were dedicated to the faithful worship of God. They were dedicated to loving one another. Their situation, being unable to have children together, was like an open wound, but it was an experience that drew out of Elkanah tender expressions of love to his wife, for his wife. At a particular low point in Hannah's discouragement, Elkanah comforted his wife with these words: Hannah, why do you weep, and why do you not eat, and why is your heart sad? Am I not better than 10 sons? That may not seem like a tremendous comfort to you, but he was appealing to the satisfaction they enjoyed in their marriage. Notice the effect. Hannah was encouraged. She started to eat and drink again, and she went to the temple to seek the Lord. That's the kind of marriage to which a godly mother is devoted. Dedication to loving God, dedication to loving one another. That's the soil where godly mothers grow and flourish. She was devoted to her God. Hannah struggled through acute pain and adversity. She was barren. She had to share her husband with another woman, one who could produce children, and she had to endure the pain of that woman's cruelty. And though Hannah was tempted to despair, she received the encouragement of her husband, turned to the Lord, and poured out her heart to him in humble devotion. Like many women today, Hannah struggled with the pain of infertility. She wanted God's best to be a mother. In her sadness, Hannah didn't complain to her husband. There was nothing he could do about it, and she didn't fight back when... I didn't look this word up. Peninnah, there's the other wife, tormented her. Instead, Hannah trusted God through prayer. That's a beautiful characteristic. She understood that God was the source of children, that God alone could alter her sterility. Her distinctive virtue was her constant faith. 1 Samuel 1:12 says, it came about as she continued praying before the Lord. Her prayers were constant. She stayed there praying with a broken heart, pouring out tearful prayers. Hannah knew where to go with her problems. Hannah was quite different from many today who long for children. She wasn't seeking a child for her own fulfillment. Childless parents today spend millions on infertility treatments, medications, special diets, egg harvesting, even in vitro fertilization. They worry and fret and sin in their continued anxiety. Not Hannah. Hannah was willing from the start to give the child back to God for life. It wasn't about her. It wasn't about getting what she wanted. It was about self-sacrifice, giving herself to that little life to give back to the Lord. After coming to that place in her heart, after expressing her desire to the Lord in prayer, she experienced the peace of humble devotion to God. She went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. She was devoted to her home. According to his perfect will, God gave Hannah a son, Samuel. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah, and this is 1 Samuel 1, with his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It came about in due time, after Hannah had conceived, that she gave birth to a son. She named him Emmanuel, or Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked him of the Lord." Hannah named her son in remembrance of God's goodness, and she devoted herself to her motherly responsibility. She was fully committed to her home. The time came for one of the annual trips to Shiloh, and Elkanah came to Hannah to prepare her for the trip. When the man Elkanah went up with all his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow, but Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "I will not go up until the child is weaned. Then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever." When God gave the child, Hannah dedicated herself to raising him. She would be devoted to that task for several years, knowing her time with him was short. That's so different from what you see today, isn't it? Women have babies, and a couple months later, they slam the baby in some daycare center and take off for the job. Not Hannah. She was totally committed to stay in the home until that little life was trained. She had important work to do: nursing, loving, cherishing, instructing. Hannah understood how vital those early years are, when 90% of personality is formed. She prepared him in those formative years for a lifetime of service to God, such a high calling. Don't mistake her devotion to raising Samuel for the modern tendency to make the child the center of the universe. Hannah discharged her responsibility as a steward. One day she had to give Samuel back. It wasn't about fulfilling her deepest needs through her child. It was about fulfilling her oath to God. It was about being faithful to her calling to be a godly mother. For those of you who are mothers, think about Hannah this Mother's Day. Be devoted to your husband, be devoted to your God, and be devoted to your home in the fear of the Lord. That's your high calling, and your greatest joy. For those of you whose mothers are still living, recognize your mother this Mother's Day for the things she did well. Look in love beyond any of the shortcomings, and honor the one who introduced you to life. Anyway, I hope that's, like, I know there's a little bit of challenge in there, but I hope that's like encouraging to you to, like, I know in thinking of, we're in the middle of raising four young children, and sometimes your job may not seem significant. Sometimes you do the things over and over and over and over and over again. It's not 5 days a week, it's 7 days a week, over and over. But it is one of the most important things. That's what God has called you to be as a mother, is to raise your children to be godly. They are the next generation. Like, I hope you understand. Like, I want to encourage you. But if you get discouraged, if you worry, don't give up. Keep going. Like, keep. You have an important job. Us men are out here. We think we're important, but really, you guys are. I mean, you're there with the children every day. You're with. And I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I just hope that, yeah, you feel the importance of it. Don't let the outside. That's probably what my thing is. Don't let the outside distractions come into your home. Don't let them think, hey, I got to go do this. I got to do this. Got to do this. Raising children is far more important than all those outside, the worldly distractions that come around us. And I know, and you're not perfect. That's okay. You know what? Neither are we. Nobody's perfect. And your children are going to learn that. They're going to know that. They're going to forgive you. They're going to be okay with that, because nobody's perfect. And I don't know. I hope it's an encouragement to you mothers. Maybe what do you have to say this morning? I need corrected or something. If you need to correct me, that's okay. You can correct me. Maybe we'll just take few minutes here. Is that 11:30? It's 11:30. See, I always talk too long. Anyway, just real quick, maybe, or not. Yeah, take. If we have a lot to say, that's fine. We'll just go here a little bit. And if you have something to share about your mom.
dwelling.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm number 7 out of 8 children, and I was far enough behind that first 5. My siblings were real close to 8. So I did not see the intense amount of work that my mom did when the first 5 came along. But she did has admitted recently that she can hardly read her diaries from those years. This makes her anxious how good it was. and along with that, yesterday, my sister Laura was here, so we went and fulfilled her wish of climbing the lighthouse again for her birthday.
Okay.
And we're discussing reading, and she just doesn't remember if she ever read to us as children. And some of us, I don't distinctly remember. I think she read to me. I don't know that. I said, somewhere along the line, you must have read to us, because I think all 8 of us, maybe 7 out of 8, actually really love to read. So in that case, it might be a taught or caught versus taught. She didn't read it. That's like a fire manager who would love reading it to you. Yeah, and another thing I heard recently, and this is an encouragement for moms, including my own mom, is that we, outside of something pretty major, we are not defined by any one moment in our lives as far as we all make mistakes. That does not necessarily define us. And so for moms, like you said, you know, Marcus's mom, you know, there's so many things that I did my best, but there were so many failures. But don't let those times when whatever it is for each individual mom, don't let that define you. Pursue, ask for good.
That's true.
Anyway,
yeah.
I thank my mom for all the many years of contributing to our life, whether it was as an infant or as a young adult teenager, and as a neighbor now. She's a neighbor.
Thank you.
She always believed in us, and I appreciate that. She was always there, always faithful, and believed that we could do whatever she believed we could handle it. And I think that's it's a blessing that she gave, and always there. And my wife, who was a tremendous mother, she was a really good mom, and I bless her. Lost her today, and also have a daughter-in-law who's going to be a mother, so, and she's going to be a good mother too.
Thank you for sharing.
One thing about motherhood that, or I would call wise motherhood, that I enjoy watching in other women, because I don't have physically given birth to anybody, but I enjoy watching wise motherhood who looks at the character development of children from the get-go, and consequently they're engaging with the child and taking those quiet moments to teach about occasions that might come up in the future. And I really enjoy that proactive. I don't know that there's nothing that thrills my heart more than seeing my friends or younger ladies do that in their children, is that wise development of character, especially in the quiet moments. And you know, children will make you embarrassed anytime, anywhere. So I enjoy the humility of them too, then, that laughs in the craziness of your children being just children. I enjoy that too, that humility that just lets you not feel like there's some stain against your character for how your little hooligans act. So those are a couple things that I really enjoy. Just a little note of encouragement. Mary already said good things about Mama, and I'll say amen to that. For that little plug-in for other moms, too.
Thank you for sharing.
I call them St. Mark orders where you live. I'm next to youngest at five, a good bit. And I, some people like to make label it as, you know, the spoiled pandemic. I didn't choose when I was born, so I would say what it is. I was blessed.
I am blessed. And the beauty of this is you know, I've been like, and I've said this so many times, you know, that my mom chose.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. But we don't realize, like, that is one of the tremendous strengths of our culture that we have here, that values so deeply.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I could just look around, and I mean, these moms are knocking it out of the park, and they're just, and all of our ladies, you know, they do a tremendous job. They have a hard work to follow God, and it comes through in their femininity.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. Yep. All right. Hey, thank you for sharing this morning, and yeah, it's there's so much. One thing I did think about is my mom. She did kind of spend. And I probably said this before, but it's okay. Like, my mom, when I was in my older years, when I was still at home, but it was out running about doing whatever, I would come in late, and she'd be still up and worrying about me and praying or whatever. But like, I would just say, mothers, don't worry about your children. Like let them, like, remember, so it's easy for me to say, right? But like, let them up, like, they're in God's hands, you know, like, so pray for them. I mean, that's that, we need that. Especially us guys, everybody needs prayer. But what I'm saying is, like, don't spend your time in worry. You know, pray to God, trust God, and that would be, yeah. And I know that's easy. I'm not a mom, and I know that mothering instinct that God has put in you, it's there, and are my children okay? And but trusting God, He will lead you through this. I hope this was an encouragement to you. It wasn't. And yes, Rochelle, thank you. Fathers are important. It's like I said, the fathers are top down. Mothers are, and we meet in the middle. Like, I think there has to be both in order for it to work how God intended it to work. And yes, so I guess that's all I have. Turn it over to you, Devon.